Okay, this is Mike Miller, and you're on the Harmony Street with me, and it's my extreme pleasure to have as my guest this week, Dooley's Main Squeeze, one and only Miss Dodie Stevens. How are you, Dodie?
I'm fine, Mike, and how are you?
I'm great. I'm enjoying the weather in southern Florida, and of course, I'm anticipating that 10 minutes of rain that we're going to get sometime this afternoon, but everything is great.
Oh, well, good.
Okay, let's talk about your career. You actually born in Chicago, is that correct?
I was born in Chicago, but I was raised in Southern California.
Which is a good thing. You know, Southern California is great.
Yeah, it was. I'm glad my parents decided to do that.
And you were actually, you arrived there when you were only about 3 years old.
Yes, exactly.
So you can consider yourself a native Californian.
I pretty much do.
Yeah. And you started singing and dancing at an early age. Who influenced you? Was that your parents who pushed you out there and said, we need you to sing and we need you to dance and we need somebody that's going to liven up our family functions?
Well, not quite that way. It was, first of all, they never really pushed me to do anything. They they saw that I had an unusual talent for such a young girl. Now, picture this. Here I am in Chicago.
Right.
Little girl. 2-3 years old, and I had an uncle, my mother's brother, who was in the Army.
Right.
And he would come home on leave and bring some of his buddies with him. And when he did, he would always encourage me to sing, because I was always singing.
Right.
So he'd take me by the hand and say, come on, Geraldine, which is my real name.
Right.
And, let's go down to the corner and do some singing. And he and his buddies would take me down to the corner, and I'd be singing, and they would be giving me nickels and pennies and dimes and things like that, and then we'd go to the little candy store on the corner, which they had back then.
Right, and they were singing too?
No, they weren't singing.
Oh, they were watching.
Singing. They were just watching. Watching and listening and liking.
So you had an agent at an early age.
I pretty much did. So, you know, it was just one of those things that I love to sing. I was told that I sang before I even actually put a sentence together.
Right.
And they saw that. They recognized it was a talent. And so when my father's parents moved to Southern California, they followed maybe a year later.
Right.
And decided that they might give me some lessons and see where it went. And
right.
That's pretty much how that all happened.
So you were a little girl and you were doing vocalises for an hour and a half every day while other kids were out playing, I guess.
Pretty much. I mean, I just loved to sing. It was my greatest joy.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I had that in my life, too. And then to be trained on top of it, you know, that really helps too. And I noticed something from listening to a lot more of your music than I had originally. And that is so many singers do not end a sentence with a consonant and actually pronounce their T's and their D's. They get lazy. But everything that I've heard listening very intently, I noticed very distinctly that you were trained, because I know my vocal coaches used to say, listen to Sinatra and see how he never misses a T or a D at the end of a word. Consonants are very important. You need to finish your words.
Yeah, well, and I had a vocal coach who pretty much did the same thing. Of course, vocal exercises, which is what truly develops the voice.
Oh, really?
But besides that, it was, well, listen to this one and listen to that one and listen to how they phrase.
Right.
Listen to their diction. And the one that she used as an example was Judy Garland.
Uh-huh.
So my very earliest influences in music was Judy Garland.
Which is a fabulous thing when you have people to kind of copy and go after. But your voice is very, very distinct, and we'll talk about that too as we move along. So you're 8 years old. You had a tune called Merry-Go-Round, is that right?
Merry-Merry-Go-Round. Two Marys in it.
Right. And you actually performed that tune on Art Linkletter's house party. Now, if I remember correctly, Art was a trip.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, tell
I
me
remember.
A little, what was your experience with Art?
Being 7-8 years old,
right.
I really don't remember. I don't remember. I remember doing the show. I remember being at CBS.
Uh-huh.
I remember being in the makeup room. Those things are very vivid. But the show itself, I don't have a lot of recollection
right.
of that. I really don't. I was such a baby girl.
Does anyone have that footage or have that at least on audio?
I have no idea.
Isn't that amazing? Because so much of that stuff just fell by the wayside.
Yes.
You know, in the old days when they used to record these TV shows, and it happened to Clay Cole, you know, believe it or not, you know, when they needed another piece of tape, they would say, okay, this is 3 years old, we'll record over this. And a lot of that stuff was lost because they didn't want to go out and buy new tape in the budget. They would record right over the old ones.
Yeah, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that was a shame. And so you were Jerry Pace at that point.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, so...
And Pace was... Jerry being short for Geraldine.
Right.
Pace was I guess, short for Pasquale, which was my given maiden name.
Gotcha.
And so it was just kind of shortened, obviously. You didn't want to see the name Geraldine Pasquale. At that time, everybody was changing their name anyhow, shortening it up, making it a lot more commercial.
Yeah, well, you know, especially if you were young and you know, what are you going to say? Yeah, call me whatever you want, just let me into the recording studio.
Whatever you want to call me, I'm it.
Yeah, I know, and managers and record company executives, they just had a penchant for taking somebody who really had a great name and saying, we're going to shorten it, we're going to do this, we're going to do that with it. I mean, and we can go through the list of people who had long, many syllable names that were shortened to one syllable, of course. Okay. Carl Burns was an executive at Crystalette Records, and he actually gave you the name Doty. Is that correct?
He and another gentleman did. It was... at the time, he was a disc jockey in Los Angeles.
Right.
Johnny Grant. But everybody would remember him as being the mayor of Hollywood forever. He's the one that whenever there was some other star that was on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, he was the one that would do the presentation. So Johnny became very well known, obviously, when he was the mayor of Hollywood. So it was the two of them. They were sitting... at a bar. Now, this is the story I got. They were sitting at a bar together, and Carl was telling him about me, and I was his new artist on Crystalette Records, and we needed to come up with a really cute name, especially for somebody as young as I was. I was 12 at the time.
Right.
And so that's how Doty Stevens came about. It was the two of them. Maybe it was over a couple shots of whiskey or something. Who knows?
And they said, you're Doty Stevens now. And you said, no, I'm not.
I said, well, okay, that's cute. I never liked the name Doty. I'm quite honest with you. I was fine with Stevens.
Right.
Going from Pasquale to Stevens was
great.
Gotcha. Yeah. Everybody could pronounce it because nobody ever knew how to pronounce my name.
You know.
So that was nice. That was really good. I would have loved to have been Jerry Stevens.
Right.
But that wasn't going to fly because... Carl felt that if anybody listened to a DJ introducing me and now hears Jerry Stevens, they would automatically think it was a guy.
Or the next DJ coming up, you know,
in
the 3 to 5 slot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That was it. That's the very simple story about that. Yeah.
All right. So here we are, and you have your new name, and they have this song. Where did Tan Shoes come from? What was the origination of that tune? Because I'm not even sure who wrote it.
Nikki Grant, girl.
Nikki
Grant wrote the song.
Uh-huh.
She was very much involved in writing very serious, meaningful lyrics and all pretty much ballads.
Right.
And it was from what I understand, and I found out this story maybe about 10 years ago.
Right.
I was informed that the way Pink Shoelaces came about was on a dare. Her friends had said, you couldn't write a silly, nonsensical song if your life depended on it.
Right.
He said, oh yeah? And she wrote Pink Shoelaces.
Uh-huh, because, you know, the whole concept was fabulous. Not only was it a great tune and very timely, but, you know, actually the first line, I mean, pulls you right in. I got a guy and his name is Dooley. And I'm sure there were times you went on stage and they put some guy there to be Dooley and you sang it to him. I'm sure that happened.
Well, it's not that anybody came up and did that on their own or that somebody arranged for them.
Oh, you were looking for Dooleys in the audience at that point.
But listen to this. I mean, later on in my career, yeah, like in the last, I guess 10 years.
Right.
Last 10 years of my career, I would actually bring somebody up on stage to play the dooley part.
Right, that sounds right.
And that always was a big hit because, you know, they they would make a fool of themselves. Not that I tried to make a fool of them.
I hear you, but hey, who wouldn't want to be part of that?
Well, they wanted to.
Of course.
They wanted to, and they, you know, they're flying up there trying to
right.
be Dooley, and I could only choose one.
Right.
And they would do the song with me, and it was always just the hit of the show.
Is Dooley. He's my guy and I love him truly. He's not good looking, heaven knows, but I'm wild about his crazy clothes. He wears tan shoes with pink shoelaces, a polka dot vest, and man oh man, he wears tan shoes with pink shoelaces and a big Panama with a purple hat band. He takes me deep sea fishing in a submarine. We go to drive-in movies in a limousine. He's got a whirly birdie and a 12-foot yacht. Ah, oh, but that's an all he's got. He's got tan shoes with pink shoelaces, a polka dot vest, and man, oh man, he wears tan shoes with pink shoelaces and a big Panama with a purple hat band. Going to war, so he went out and enlisted in a fighting corps. But he landed in the brig for raising such a storm. When they tried to put him in a uniform, he wanted tan shoes with pink shoelaces, a polka dot vest, and man oh man, he wanted tan shoes with pink shoelaces and a big Panama with a purple hat band. One day, Dooley started feeling sick, and he decided that he'd better make his will out quick. He said,
just before the angels come to carry me, I want it down and writing how to bury me.
A wearing tan shoes with pink shoelaces, a polka dot vest, and man, oh man, tan shoes with pink shoelaces, and a big Panama with a purple hat band. A big Panama with a purple hat band.
Did you ever have somebody come up to you later on and say, my mother named me Dooley after that song?
I never did, but close to it. I had someone just this last year when I was doing a doo-wop show, and we always do a meet and greet afterwards.
Of course. Been there, done that.
Yeah, I know you have.
Right.
And so he came up to me, came up to the table where I was signing autographs,
right,
pictures and whatnot. And he said that he had legally changed his name to Dooley.
No kidding.
Yeah, and he was dressed the part.
Wow.
He had the hat and the shoes and the polka dot vest. And
did he ask you to dinner?
No.
No, fool. Okay. So then here you are, you're 13 years old, 12 or 13, and you have the number 3 record in the nation, and it goes gold, and my goodness, I mean, for a 13-year-old, your life changed forever at that point, I'm sure. How could you go back to school and walk in to study hall? I'm sure there was all kinds of excitement around you.
There was, but a little bit of both went on. There was the excitement and the joy of just kind of being around a celebrity. And then there was the other side to it, which was kids and teachers, for that matter.
Right.
Some teachers that were jealous,
yeah,
would ridicule me. Not the teachers, the kids would ridicule me.
Yeah.
Kids will be kids. Teachers, on the other hand, would be either they were very, very understanding and helpful with my studies.
Right.
If I had to go on tour for a couple weeks, mm-hmm, they would let me take my work with me.
Right.
They would let me make it up when I got back.
Special attention.
Yeah, but then there were others that if I wasn't there, I I missed the lesson, and I got an F in the class.
All right.
That was that.
And they said, and they would point to you and say, the redhead is out of control again, right?
Oh, redhead. I wish I was a redhead back then.
Oh, okay. There you go. Never mind.
Yeah.
We're not going there.
Yeah. So it was a very interesting time. There was a lot of joy, and then there was a lot of some kind of heartbreak. Heartbreak in the sense, I mean, that's kind of a heavy term to use for
right.
a kid at 13, but
I hear you.
I wanted to be accepted, and I wanted to be like everybody else. I didn't want to be treated special in any way.
Right.
I didn't think I was special.
No, I understand.
I wanted to be who I had always been. So when I had some kids that shunned me or made fun of me, or I'd walk down the hall and they would be singing Pink Shoelaces and making up funny little lyrics.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't a fun time.
No, I understand what you're saying. But then again, you had the edge because, you know, that kind of an experience at that age, it gives you, when you come out of it, it gives you so much poise. You get to deal with adult situations. You get to understand what it is to stand in front of an audience. And because at that age, who had the poise to do that? I mean, that's a terrifying experience for most kids. And
yeah.
Probably was a little terrifying the first time you realized that, oh my goodness, I'm in the top 10, and you were out there and you say, everybody in the place is fixated on me. I mean, that's a lot of pressure for a young girl.
Yes, it was. There was a lot of pressure. That's the word. It was me trying to be just me and just carry on with a normal life.
Right. And
my parents wanting that for me as well. That's why they didn't take me out of public school.
Right.
You know,
okay.
A private school or professional. There was Hollywood Professional that a lot of the younger celebrities were going to.
Right.
And they just didn't want that for me. They
right.
wanted me to keep both feet on the ground and to just be a normal teenager.
But mind you, my thought is that at this particular time in life, it was well before all of the big music lawyers got into the business and whatever.
Yeah.
And you were, during that particular time in the music business, you were pretty much at the mercy of the record companies and the A&R guys and the DJs and whatever was going on the chart. And if they said, stand over there and sing that song, you said, okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Because you did what they asked you to do because you were just glad to be there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now it's different. Now, as we both know, the music business is so different. But, you know, it's not like someone can go out and say, we're the Drifters. Nobody else can go out and say, I'm Dodie Stevens. Only you can do that.
I know that. And I've seen a lot of these tribute groups or some of the groups that I've done shows with
right.
where there might be one original
right.
singer left, and then the rest are
right.
new.
And he's 70, and the rest of them are 32.
Yeah, right.
But, you
right.
know,
oh, my goodness.
I'll take one original, though. I'll always take one original, because my thing is, especially in Florida, where you have such a large group of baby boomers, it's all about the music. They just want to sit in a chair, pay their money, and they just want you to take them back to where they were. And you know yourself. I mean, you know, you go right into that tune and you see the look on their faces, and it makes them feel good. Because
yes.
you were in all of their homes. And you might not know them, but they all know you. And that's really how it is. So then you got into a little bit of a niche of doing some answer tunes, and I will tell you that the Merry Merry Christmas Baby, I knew Margot Sylvia, and
uh-huh.
I've worked on a lot of shows with the Toon Weavers. We actually, with my Harmony Street group, which was three girls, myself, and a bass singer, we actually did Margot's Come Back to Me tune, which was a great tune. But the Merry Merry Christmas Baby tune, if you go even inside the tune and you listen to the orchestration and you listen to the floating falsetto and whatever, you really copped that tune. And I guess in order to make it work, it had to be done really authentically with that very, very R&B doo-wop type of sound, which the producers of that tune managed to do.
Merry, Merry Christmas, baby. Though you're with somebody. thought he knew. Thought I'd send a card to say, wish this joyous holiday would find me close to you. Merry, merry Christmas, baby. T'was a Christmas Eve we met, a holiday I won't forget, for that's when we fell in love. I still remember the gift you gave so. Christmas, baby, and a happy new year too. I am hoping that you'll find a love as true as mine to last a lifetime.
You know, I mean, it was, as a matter of fact, when I listen to it, I think I'm almost listening to the original track, you know, which it is not.
Yeah, no, you know? they definitely duplicated Happy, Happy Birthday, Baby.
Yeah.
Duplicated that track and that arrangement.
And that's important to have those kind of production people around you because, you know, they can make you or break you.
Of course.
So, you know, I mean, like I think back to some of the shows you do and you have six or seven groups in the act and they do the sound check backwards. And then by the time you're great on stage during the sound check, by the time they get to you during the show, you know, you feel like you're on another planet.
Oh, yeah. You've forgotten pretty much everything.
Right. You know,
that they did at the sound check and the rehearsal. I give all of them such kudos, the backup bands.
Oh, absolutely. Because,
oh, my God, what they have to do for all of us acts and then do the show.
And right.
And make it sound the same.
And they come in.
With very detailed charts.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the backup bands come in all sizes and all shapes. You know what I mean? Now, I'm very friendly, actually, with Vita Gardner, and I actually did I did Carl's last interview before he passed away, and I was at the funeral, and I noticed that you did a few shows with the Coasters as well.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, their charts are very tough to do because a lot of stops, a lot of pauses, a lot of stops and starts, and, you know, and if you're a backup band reading those charts, unless you've actually looked at them before the sound check, it's tough, and I'm sure your material's the same way.
Well, pretty much. No. Like you said, everything goes pretty smoothly at the rehearsal, at the sound check.
Yeah.
You might have to stop here and there and go over something, but for the most part, it goes good from beginning to end, and then you get up on stage. In fact, I had, talking about that, I had a gig that I did just a few months ago, and it was a doo-wop show.
Right.
And as you said, the rehearsal went great.
Right.
About six or seven artists on the show. Artists on the show. I think I was in the opener of the second half of the show.
Okay.
And I walk on stage and I didn't know what they were playing.
You didn't recognize it.
I did not. And it seemed like the drummer was playing one thing and the rest of the band was playing another.
Uh-huh.
And now, mind you, this is just as I'm walking out on stage after I've been introduced, talking to the audience. How you doing? Is everybody having a good time?
Right.
Are you enjoying the show?
Right.
And I'm trying to find a nice place where I can figure out where I'm at.
Right.
And go into the opener.
Gotcha.
Never happened. Never happened. To where I finally turned around and I said to the band, is this some kind of joke? Are you guys playing a joke on me?
Right.
And then and then they stopped for just a moment,
right.
And then everybody started up again, and everybody was doing the same song.
Gotcha.
Well, come to find out that after the show, I found out from the drummer. He said, "I am so sorry, Dodie. I'm so sorry. It was all my fault.
Right.
Because the first song doesn't have a chart."
Yeah. Oh, so he went to the second. He was playing the second song.
What?
He was playing the second song.
Yes. Yes. I was just playing the chart that was in front of me, and it was the
right.
second song. I'm
right.
so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Right.
Oh. Those things happen, and you know, you go with the flow. You roll with the punches. I never make a big deal out of it.
No, you can't.
No, I mean, I will never stop the band and go, okay, let's start all over again.
Yeah.
I won't do that, but I'll tell you, I was really close to doing it that time because I didn't know what else to do. But it was after I just said, you guys playing a joke on me, that it's just enough time for them to stop and then pick up where they were supposed to be. But, yeah, those things happen. They just happen.
I had a time one time we were doing a show. It was Mystics, Dupree's. Let me try to guess who else was on the show. I can't. But anyway, we came out and it was a train wreck. And I turned around because none of the other guys knew what to do. And I said, "I spat." And, you know, of course the audience laughed and I stopped the band. And I said, "Give me an F arpeggio." And we did the next two tunes a cappella and the audience understood exactly what was going on. We got a standing ovation. I mean, sometimes we were doing a show with my Harmony Street group with Johnny Maestro, and they actually came out and they blew the beginning of a tune, and John said something which I've used many times. He says, "You know, back in Brooklyn, when we were on the street corner, we always got one do-over." He said, "We're using ours now." And that worked.
Yeah.
You know, because they understood that. You get a do-over.
Yeah.
You know? "Yes, I'm Lonesome Tonight." Tell me about that tune, because that's a big undertaking to do a tune.
Doing
like
an Elvis?
Oh, absolutely. You know.
Whoa. Well, there again, it was the record company telling me what to do, what
right.
song to sing.
Uh-huh.
And answer songs were really big right around that. It was a trend.
Oh, yeah. He had about 15 in a row.
Boy, I'm telling you, it was one right after the other.
Right. So
they wanted me to jump on the bandwagon, and
right.
then I did, you know,
right.
with "Yes, I'm Lonesome Tonight."
Now,
and I loved doing it. I didn't always like the song.
If they were smart, they would have worked you into an Elvis show, and you could have done it with him. See.
Much too young. I was much.
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked. He would have said, right, they would have arrested him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's funny.
But no, none of that could work. None of that could work. But just having the answer song was wonderful for me. And when I do it in my shows, many times I'll play just a little bit of his song, like maybe the first 12 or 16 bars of his "Are You Lonesome Tonight?" And then I just go right into...
You could do the Nat King Cole, Natalie Cole thing. You could
I know.
I mean, you guys could work that in very, very easily, and he can be in one of your shows.
Yeah, oh, my God.
That might work, you know.
Yeah.
Talk to Ned.
Yeah, if anybody could do it, he would.
Yeah, there
you go. He'd know how to do it, yeah.
There you go.
"Yes, I'm lonesome tonight, and I miss you tonight. I'm so sorry we drifted apart, and my memory strays to those wonderful days when you kissed me and called me sweetheart. All the chairs in the parlor seem empty and bare as I gaze at the doorstep and picture you there. Now my heart's filled with pain. Take me back once again. Yes, my dear, I'm so lonesome tonight. Yes, my darling, I'm lonesome tonight. I realize now that the world is a stage, and each of us must play a part. I know, too, that fate sometimes acts in strange ways. Yes, Act One is where we met, and I, too, loved you at first glance. But I guess I didn't really read my lines too well. Then came Act Two. I've never changed. There was a misunderstanding. I know now that I shouldn't have listened to a so-called friend. The truth is my love, that she wanted you for her own. You don't really have to doubt me, nor must you go on without me. Yes, the stage is bare, but please wait there, because I'm coming to you, darling, and we'll be together when they bring the curtain down. Now my heart's filled with pain. Take me back once again. Yes, my dear, so lonesome tonight.
And so we have the tune No.
Don't you understand English? No.
There's a lot of humping I gotta do.
And oh no.
And I wanna do my humping with you.
Please let go.
Come a little closer, baby.
Of my hand.
Why do you treat me like you do?
Every time I let you kiss me, kiss me. My heart goes on a roller coaster ride. And every time I let you kiss me, kiss me.
Baby,
of my hand.
Why do you treat me like you do?
She says no.
Come on, another number I'm gonna call.
And oh no.
In an hour I'll be having a ball.
Don't let go.
Guess I'll stay here after all.
When I say no. Don't let go.
Yeah.
And we have the tune I Cried.
I Cried, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that one too.
Cry.
Yeah, you know, that's what I wanted to ask you. What's your favorite Doty song? What's the song that if they said, you know, Doty, we want you to make just a cameo guest appearance and there's one tune we want you to do, what song would that be?
No one has ever asked me that question.
Well, here you go.
It's a great question.
Yep.
And off the top of my head, I don't have an answer.
All right. Because I know, you know, being a vocalist myself, there are certain tunes that you say, okay, this one I own. Maybe I don't own that one, but I know that I own this one.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, talking about I Cried, I liked the song. I loved She Cried.
Right.
And so when I sang it and I became the she of the song.
Can I tell you something? On Wednesday night, I am going to see a friend of mine who I know since I'm a kid, since I'm 17 years old. His name is Jay Traynor, and he sang She Cried with Jay and the Americans, and I'm going to see him on Wednesday night with Paulette because he does a Sinatra-type show that we're going to go to in Boca, believe it or not.
Uh-huh.
So interesting that song should come up, you know.
Yeah, and that could really be the one out of all the songs that I recorded, and my goodness, I recorded a lot of singles and three albums, and that was special. I Cried was special.
Really? Oh, you know, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting scenario. This is a question that I've been dying to ask you. Who was the male voice on Tan Shoes?
And I've been asked that question a lot.
Uh-huh.
Okay, here's the answer.
Go ahead.
Back then, all the background singers that were hired for recording sessions were men.
Right.
They were males.
Okay.
They didn't have female groups
uh-huh.
coming in to do background parts. I don't know why, but that was just what was going on. So for Pink Shoelaces, they had hired three background singers, male background singers.
Right.
The Jack Halloran singers.
Uh-huh.
And the gentleman that sang bass in the group was the one that did that male part.
I see. They just pointed to him and cued him, and he came in and he did it, you know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And we don't remember his name. He was just the bass singer.
Yeah.
And that's the end of that. He shall just go nameless.
Maybe so.
Yeah. Okay, you know.
He's just going to have to. Because I have no idea. I just know that he was one of the three backup singers.
And here's another question that you've probably never been asked, and that is, Daddy, get me one of those. What was it that Daddy never got a chance to get you?
I have no idea. No, I don't even remember that song.
Daddy, get me one of those. That's a song that you recorded.
It is? When did I record it, Mike?
I'm not sure. But I came across it. I came across it. I'll do more research on it, and I'll get back to you.
Daddy, get me one of those.
Yep.
Whoa.
And as a matter of fact, I will tell you this. When you have that kind of a career and you go into the studio and you do so many cuts, I'm sure there are things that you don't remember doing. I would imagine you've probably recorded 200 tunes.
Oh, at least, I would say. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So many of them were shelved.
Yeah, and that was probably one that was shelved. But I did come across that. I don't think it was another Doty. I think it was you.
I don't think there were any other Dotys that were singers.
Wait a minute. What? Daddy couldn't get me one of those.
Not at all.
One of those. How I need a tender or two.
Yeah. Okay, so now you're at a point where you're starting to do a couple of albums. There was the Dodie Stevens album.
That was all standards from
right.
the 50s.
Yeah. Which is great because I love standards. I mean, I've done an album of standards, and you know, you get to do all the tunes that you know and love all those years.
Yeah.
I don't know the album per se, but I'm sure I can guess at least four or five of the tunes that are on there.
Well, you probably could. A lot
you know.
Of Gershwin tunes and and that kind of thing. It was just, it was a fun album to do, and the orchestration, when I listen to it now, I didn't appreciate it back then, but when I listen to it now, and I hear the orchestration, it's just absolutely beautiful with all the strings.
Oh,
and the,
yeah. Because if you're not doing a Nelson Riddle type of thing, you know, behind your 40s tunes, then you're not really getting the feel. And that's what, you know, I'll tell you what, I noticed that Michael Bublé, between you and me, uses the original Nelson Riddle tracks when he records. He goes right in there and uses the original tracks and records to them. And
he
saves a lot of money because I know those tracks.
Yeah.
I know those tracks very, very well.
Yeah.
You know, Over the Rainbow, I'm sure you have an affinity for that tune.
Yeah.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby. You dare to dream, really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops, away above the chimney tops. That's where you'll find me, somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly, birds fly over the rainbow, why then, oh, why can't I?
eye teeth on that one.
And it's a hard tune to do. You know, not everybody does that that tune the way it's meant to be. And, of course, being a Garland person, I'm sure that that was a tune that you got very familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Everybody, that when you say the name Judy Garland, it's synonymous with Over the Rainbow and vice versa.
Absolutely.
There's a somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that he turns out to be someone who'll watch over me. I'm a little lamb who's lost in the wood. I know I could always be good to one who'll watch over me. Tell him please to put on some speed. Follow my lead. Oh, how I need someone to watch over me. Tell him please to put on some speed. Follow my lead. Oh, how I need someone to watch over me.
And you did a Pink Shoelaces album as well.
Yeah, I did. And that, and interestingly enough, it was my third album. It was my last album on Dot. And
right.
So I'm thinking I must have been 15, 16, maybe 15.
Wow.
And there I was with Pink Shoelaces on that album. Now, if I was a record executive, that would have been on my first album.
I gotcha.
Would have sold more albums, for one thing.
Yeah, because people would make that connection.
Sure, and they would want the album just because that song was on there.
I agree.
Now, granted, it would not have had any place on an album that was a lot of standards, but I would have saved that one. Say, put that one back a little bit. Let's do the Pink Shoelaces, and that's what the album was called.
Right.
Shoelaces, and it had Pink Shoelaces and all a bunch of other songs from that time frame. Yes, I'm Lonesome Tonight was
right.
on it. No
right.
was on it.
Right.
Turnaround, Just a Dream, Rockin' Robin.
Gotcha.
He rocks in the treetop all the day long, hopping and a bopping and a singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, 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 rockin' robin.
Tweet,
rock,
tweet,
rock, tweet, rockin' robin.
Tweet, tweet,
tweet. Blow, rockin' robin, cause I'm really gonna rock tonight.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Every little swallow, every chickadee, every little bird in the tallow tree, the the wise old owl and the big black crow, flapping their wings, singing, go, birdie, go, rockin' robin.
Tweet,
rock,
tweet,
rock, tweet, rockin' robin.
Tweet, tweetity.
No, rockin' robin, cause we're really gonna rock tonight. Was grand. Started going steady and it blessed my soul. He out-bopped the buzzard and the oriole. He rocks in the treetop all the day long, hopping and a-bopping and a-singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin going tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' robin.
Tweet,
drop,
tweet,
rock, tweet, rockin' robin.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
No, rockin' robin, cause we're really gonna rock tonight.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Pretty little raven at the birdman's stand taught him how to do the bop and it was grand. Started going steady and it blessed my soul. He out-bopped the buzzard and the oriole. He rocks in the treetop all the day long, hopping and a-bopping and a-singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin going tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' robin.
Tweet,
rock, rock,
tweet.
Rockin' robin.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Blow rockin' robin, cause we're really gonna rock.
Yeah, to know him is to love him.
To love, love, love him. Just to see him smile makes my life worthwhile. To know him is to love, love, love him. And I do. Says there'll come a day when I'll walk alongside of him. Yes, yes, to know him is to love, love, love him, and I do.
Yeah.
Good song.
I hear you.
I don't know why they didn't do that, but whatever.
But you also recorded I Fall to Pieces, so there's the country doty.
And that was on that album, too.
Oh, no kidding. Okay, that's, because I know that cut. I've listened to it.
Yeah.
And you did a great job on that song, too.
Thank you.
Again, I pretend we've never met. And I tried, but I haven't yet. You walk by, and I fall to pieces.
Let's talk about the movies that you did, because, you know, here you are. We're talking about a 3 or 4 year period, and you're having a whole career, you know, in 4 or 5 years. You're doing things that people take a whole career in order to accomplish.
Oh, yeah. At that time, I think if you were good in one field of entertainment, they were going to make sure that they threw you in a bunch of other.
Yeah, but not always true, because let me tell you, I know people that can sing but can't act. I know people that can sing but can't dance. I know people, you know, so basically there were really, you know, you're being modest. I mean, there were really only a small handful of people that could really be the consummate performer. Like a Debbie Reynolds was, or some of the others, where a studio would get a hold of you and just polish you in every way. Really, a lot of them were not multifaceted.
Maybe it was because of my age. I was a teenager, and they wanted to use those teen idols for people to go to the movies and see their favorite artist up there, you know?
Right.
And then we usually sang in them. Like when I did Hound Dog Man, I sang in the movie. Fabian sang in the movie.
Uh-huh.
And so that was all part of it. It was just to get the younger set, you know, the younger crowd. So
I saw our Golden Boys about 3 years ago. Paulette and I were downstairs with them, you know, backstage before the show. And they just were terrific. I think Bobby had just lost his wife at that point. Could have been 4 or 5 years ago. Fabian had just been in a car accident and wasn't feeling that great. And Frankie was Frankie, you know?
Yeah.
He had his son with him and his wife with him and the whole entourage. And it was, you know, they were great as usual. And I know that you did a lot of work with them as well.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I worked with them. I worked with all of them individually, and I also worked with them when they were the Golden Boys.
Also, you had the distinction of being Dee Dee the Monkey.
You bet I did. You bet I did. I mean, now, here I am in my first movie working with Fabian, who was a heartthrob.
Right.
And then I'm able to work with Frankie Avalon, who's another heartthrob.
Right.
And play his girlfriend.
Right.
Whether it was a monkey or not, I didn't care.
I hear you.
I could have been a cricket.
Right.
It didn't matter.
Right.
Just, I got to be his girlfriend, monkey or otherwise. It just was a big thrill for
me. Now, did anybody ever walk up to you, you know, in San Diego and said, oh my goodness, it's Dee Dee the Monkey?
No. I don't think enough people saw that movie or knew anything about Alakazam the Great.
Yeah, well, Alakazam.
Good movie.
Alakazam the Great, I mean, you know,
yeah.
There it is.
I don't think I'm the king type. I heard a throne can be the same as a prison.
Oh, my. You're not afraid.
I can't even swim. And that water's freezing, they say. And I'd have to jump.
Oh, I think you'd have to. If you want to be king, that is.
Yep. Tell me, what's your name?
My friends call me Dee Dee.
Dee Dee. Nice name. I'm not sure I'm going to like this, but when you got it, you got it.
And Convicts 4.
Convicts 4, I had a cameo part in that.
That must have been fun.
That was fun. I didn't play anybody's girlfriend on that one. I was a sister to to the starring role, and that was fun. But it was brief.
Okay.
It was one day's work, and that was it.
Now, at 16 years old, you moved to Missouri, and you lived on a farm. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Wow, and was it a full tilt, full-fledged running farm with
no.
chickens, and or was it just like a farm, lowercase farm?
Okay, I had on my farm, I had chickens.
Right.
A couple of ducks.
Okay.
A cow.
Hey, you have chickens and a cow. You're on a farm.
And a couple of horses.
Okay.
There it was.
That's enough. That's enough of an entourage to have a farm.
I think so. I think that qualifies as a farm.
You know, and did you go out to the hen house and pick up the eggs?
Did the egg business.
So you be on a farm.
Yes, I did. I did the egg business.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had your daughter, Stephanie, which I know is the love of your life, and I'm sure that changed your life.
Totally.
Right.
Totally changed my life. And we're best of friends.
Right, which is great.
We sing together whenever I do my shows.
Right.
She is part of the show.
Wonderful.
Which I absolutely adore.
That's a fabulous thing when you can do that. And also, you know, I would imagine you had stopped singing for a while, but as we all know, once you have that creative part in you, you almost get to the point where you need to sing, and if you don't sing, you start to wither away because it's just something that you need to do.
It is. It is a part of you. It comes from your soul and your heart.
Right.
And when you don't do it, and I didn't for about 4 years, but then when I got back into show business, it was coming home again.
Now, you recorded a tune called Billy, I've Got to Go to Town?
Yep, another answer.
Now, okay, right. You know, that's, to me, that's almost like Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town.
It was.
There you go.
It was the answer to it.
And you recorded it as Geraldine Stevens.
Yes, I did.
I painted up my lips and rolled and curled my tinted hair. Billy, now you're sure I'm gonna cheat on you somewhere. I don't know how much longer I can stand this jealousy. Oh, Billy, please have some faith in me. Begged you not to go and fight that crazy Asian war. But you believed so strongly in what you were fighting for. And now you've got to sit and stare at shadows on the ground. Oh, I've got to go to town. I'd gladly give the world if I could make you understand. Well, I said I'd do, and that's still true. You'll always be my man. They robbed you of your legs. Don't let them strip you of your pride. Oh, Billy, you're still a man inside. Don't make me leave this house with you accusing me of wrong. 'Cause Billy, it's so hard.
go and leave you here alone. You've given all you've got to give, and now it's up to me. Oh, Billy, that's how it's got to be. Oh, my Billy, for God's sake, trust in me.
Okay, so, you know, you pretty much, you could put all the names in a hat and, you just throw them out, whichever name comes up, as long as it had a Geraldine or a Stevens or a Doty in it, that was you.
That was me.
We could find you.
Well, when I got back into the business, which was after the farm in Missouri.
Right.
I wasn't a kid anymore.
Okay.
I was 21.
Oh, you're probably still a kid.
I feel more like a kid now than I did when I was 21.
There you go.
Or 13, even, for that matter.
Okay.
But I used the name Doty to get back into the business, but it had changed so much with the Beatle invasion.
Right.
Mid-60s.
Right.
Just everything had changed. And so the ones that were the powers that be at that point in time, they either didn't know Doty Stevens.
Right.
So it didn't matter. There was no name value.
Right. And that could happen, you know.
Of course.
I mean, you know, it could happen.
Or they knew Doty Stevens.
Right.
And they could only think of me as a kid.
Gotcha.
So that wasn't working for me. And I tried. Like I said, I got back into it, and it's Doty Stevens. Back, she's back, and I was back to nothing. So that's when I went, well, let's just change the whole persona, and now it's the adult Doty Stevens.
Yeah, and
I'm going to have to change the name because people are just not going to let me get away from pink shoelaces. And
yeah, I hear you,
little Doty Stevens. And I went and used my
name. But you got to, but you know what? You got to bring those pink shoelaces with you wherever you go, because, you know, you got to have them somewhere in your back pocket or whatever all the time, because, you know, they work. They always work, those pink shoelaces, you know.
Yes.
And you also got to work with one of my all-time favorites, Sergio Mendez. When I had one of my groups during the 70s, we used to do a tune called The Real Thing by Sergio Mendez. And what a moving tune that was. I'm sure you possibly know that tune.
I don't.
Oh, look it up on YouTube. It's called The Real Thing.
Okay. I don't ever remember singing
that. He might have recorded that tune during the mid-70s.
Okay. I had left him in 73.
There you go. So I think he probably recorded it the year after. It's called The Real Thing.
Okay.
Yep. And I think you probably missed it by a few months, or you would have been singing it.
I loved that. I loved being a part of that show. I loved the music. I loved the rhythm of it all.
Right.
I could use my dance training in it because Sergio wanted us all.
Oh, yeah. He always had
those hips.
He always had a bunch of babes out front, you know, really just rocking it and singing it, always.
Yeah. Well, not a bunch. Only two.
Only two.
Only two. He was in the middle on the piano.
Oh, okay.
And each one of us.
Now, I think after you left, he added a few. I think he replaced.
Maybe?
I think he replaced you with two girls.
Oh, okay. See,
I'm pretty sure.
He needed two to replace me.
He did. He did, because after that, during the 70s, he had three. It's true. Look it up. And then, of course, as egoless as you are, you spend a lot of time being a backup singer for other people, which is hard for an out front singer to do, just to enjoy singing and the singing well. And you worked with Frankie and Boz Skaggs, of all people, you know, who I love.
Remember Boz in the 70s?
Loretta Lynn and of course, Mac Davis, who, you know, Mac Davis, I don't know whether people realize this, he was a super talented guy.
Very, very talented as a writer in particular.
Right.
Yeah. He wrote for Elvis,
right.
In the Ghetto, and Memories, and Something's Burning. He was the original writer on Something's Burning.
Wow, I didn't know that. Kenny Rogers.
Kenny Rogers in the first edition.
Wow.
That was Mac. That was Mac's song. And I remember him telling me a story about it, that he had written that song and rewritten it and kept submitting it, and it was rejected and rejected until finally he just rewrote it again and submitted it to Kenny and the first edition, and that was it.
Wow.
He believed so much in that song that he was not going to take no for a final answer.
So,
he kept revamping it somehow, revising it.
Oh, yeah, which, you know, you have to do. I mean, so you were with him for about 12 years. Did you do the show with him as well, the TV show?
I didn't. I was with him after the TV show.
Oh, okay. All right. What's he doing now? I mean, he can't stay away. I know he retired, but you know, he shouldn't stay away.
Right. I think he retired in about 89.
Oh, okay. It's a while ago.
Yeah, but he retired only from live performances. He continued to write and just kind of keep his hands in the music in some way, but only behind the scenes. I think the touring, which we did a lot of in Vegas and Tahoe and Atlantic City, and then we did a lot of auditoriums. Every summer we were doing some huge performing arts theater, and it just got to him. He had done it for so many years, and then he was recently remarried and wanted to be home to help raise his family, like he was not able to do in his earlier career.
Yeah, but if he wanted to sing again, I'll bet you all the bubbies in Boca would just eat him up.
They would love him. Oh, my God.
Well,
yes.
Just the way they love the Golden Boys. I mean, the Golden Boys have been, you know, to the Boca Resort and the Polo Club and St. Andrews and Woodfield Country Club, and they just keep doing the circuit. And people just did. When Frankie gets out there and says, look at me, could you imagine I was the big kahuna? You know, they go nuts.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's a good thing. So here you are, you're in San Diego, and you're teaching young people how to sing.
Not just young people, I want you to know.
Old people too.
I'm amazed at the folks that come into my studio for a lesson, and everybody's got their own reason for wanting lessons, and somebody that's 60-something or 50-something, my oldest was 80-something.
Wow, that's great. And you teach stage performance as well.
Yeah, because that, to
look them in the eye.
That's really important.
Right.
Nobody teaches that.
No. Hey, listen. Now with the invention of cordless mics, I have seen so many performers that don't know what to do with that other hand, because for years and years and years you held the cord.
Yeah, I know that.
And now that we have cordless mics, nobody knows what to do with that hand.
I know somebody I won't mention names.
Go ahead.
You know somebody in the business,
right,
who requires a mic with a cord. She will not work. It's a she, and she will not work with a wireless.
I hear you. Hey, listen, I'm sure there were a lot of people that do that. And it's amazing how, having done the oldie circuit, it's amazing how you run into people and you listen to them, and then they're in their late 70s, close to 80, mid 70s, and you say, oh my goodness, they still have chops that are so phenomenal that I just can't believe it. I mean, they're still like right on it. And then you run into certain other people and you say, oops.
Yeah.
But it's still them.
Yeah.
And you know, you pay them homage.
Of course.
But it's just,
you know,
amazing.
This is my opinion about those two different categories.
Right.
I think the ones that still have it.
Right.
Are the ones that have continued to use it.
You're right.
The ones that don't are the ones that have put it aside for years and years, and every now and then maybe they come out and they do a show Well, that instrument has not been used.
I agree.
The voice is made up largely of muscle.
You bet.
And so if you're not working the muscle, it's like any other muscle in your body. It's just going to atrophy. It's not going to be there for you.
Well.
It's going to be under your control anymore. So I think that's the difference.
I agree. I haven't sung out in about a year. I'm still recording, you know, and I'm doing the show and everything, but I haven't done a show, a full, you know, 90-minute show in about a year. And I'm saying to myself, if I wanted to do that, I'd have to at least walk around the house doing the bubble exercise and a few siren exercises,
yep,
you know,
for
a week or two just to get it back up there. Because I had a vocal coach, her name was Lucy Bell Anderson. She lived in Reading, Connecticut, and she was on the Hit Parade years ago. Her daughter is with the Songwriters Hall of Fame. Her husband was one of the consultants on the movie 12 O'Clock High and was the voice for Barney's Men's Store, Roger Anderson. And she convinced me that good singing was not so much doing anything, but basically moving things out of the way so that your natural voice could free up. And, of course, breathing and, of course, continuing to push that range up was something. But there are so many vocalists who get out there and they're trying to do something rather than to just let it come up into the top of your head.
Right.
You know, they're squeezing, they're pushing, they're,
yeah,
you know, and that's really not what it is. It's like everything else that happens naturally in life. It's a completely, it's almost a metaphysical approach.
Letting go.
I guess you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I do.
Oh, absolutely.
I absolutely know what you're talking about. I'll often tell my students, sing, just let that song be sung through you. Don't think about singing
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Try to sing it.
Right.
Let it be sung.
Don't try to sing it. Exactly.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Dick Clark, what was it like working with Dick Clark?
He was such a nice man. Now, see, being as young as I was, of course, I did a lot of his shows.
Right.
So I got to be around him a lot. But every time I was with him, every time I was around him doing work with him, I just remember him being a very kindly man.
Good, good, good. I'm glad.
Kind.
Because, you know, I mean, of course, you know, I know all the stories about Dick, and, you know, there were some great ones, there were some not so great ones, but I guess, you know, when you were right in the thick of it with him,
uh-huh,
he was very much for the performers.
Yeah,
you know?
I just remember very positive, good things about him. That's all. That was my experience with
him.
Yeah,
and you know, having done American Bandstand, I mean, you know, that was at that point, that was the pinnacle. If you were on American Bandstand, it was a great thing. Let's talk about Dodie Stevens and the commercials that you did.
I did a lot of my commercials in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And two probably that were the most well-known.
Right.
Would be Sprint.
Right.
And Dole Pineapple.
Uh-huh. Now, you didn't have to get dressed up as a pineapple, did you?
Or I did not have to dress up like anything because I was just a voiceover.
You were a voiceover. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's great. It's very hard to crack into doing commercials. I mean, I know, you know, Jay Siegel's a good friend of mine, and I know he did so many commercials with the Tokens and everything, but I know that these days it's so hard to crack into that. You know, even if you're very talented, it's very close-knit circle of people that get into that. But
it's
always a
yeah.
good thing. Now, the
for
Dole,
yourself.
I'd be very interested in hearing the Dole Pineapple commercial, but I couldn't find it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to write to Dole.
Ooh, I don't know if they still have it after the 80s.
Oh, I'm sure, you know, listen, I'll tell you, this stuff is around. I mean, I've spoke to so many performers, and I say to them, you know, do you remember recording this and this? And they go, no. And I say, well, it's sitting on YouTube if you want to hear it. And they say, how do people find this stuff? There are people out there that probably have recordings that you either don't remember or certainly don't have of your own.
Yeah, I'm sure of that.
You know, I mean, that's just the way people are, you know?
Yeah, that does not surprise me.
The Bop Review. Tell us about that.
That was so much fun. That was a really great time in my career as well. It was after Mac had retired.
Right.
And I wasn't ready to do any kind of retiring.
Right.
Neither were with the other singer-dancers that I was with or
right.
the band.
Right.
So a few of us got together and we produced a 50s and 60s review, which was called Bop.
Right.
Of course, it had Pink Shoelaces in it. And it had medleys. There was a medley called the Backseat Medley.
Right.
Where we did all these love songs, these ballads. Make It Easy on Yourself, which is probably one of
great
the
tune, yeah.
greatest songs I've ever heard by Jerry Butler. You know, that kind of thing. We did a Motown Temptations medley where we all dressed up in like tuxedos, and this was girls as well.
Right. So in other words, well, you know, you go to Branson, there's that kind of a review on every street, and people don't understand how much work goes into segueing tunes one into another and doing a review. A review is not like singing one song and saying thank you.
Yeah.
It goes from start to finish and moves. You don't have a chance to breathe.
Lots of costume changes.
Right.
And I mean, there's a lot of coordination that goes into putting a show together like that, especially when there's several medleys. And as you say, the segue from one into another, and it needs to be smooth and just enough time. My sister was the wardrobe mistress.
Oh, no kidding.
We did our quick changes because, I mean, we had to make some very fast. There were five costume changes, and so we had it timed. We had it. It was fun. We worked pretty much Vegas and Lake Tahoe, Reno. But it just didn't get off the ground. I mean, everybody loved it when they saw the show. They loved it. But it just didn't last.
You know, I'm laughing because Mary Wilson's a good friend of mine. And, you know, she has all of the Supremes gowns. She has them. For some reason, she has them in her closets,
wow.
and she displays them. So I always say to her, you know, you should hand them out, you know, and give them, you know, like whoever's going to be, you know, whatever, let them wear, you know, whatever. But I guess you got to be a certain type to wear a Supremes gown, you know.
You have to have a good body, too.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. I haven't seen Diana in a while. I'm pretty sure she's pretty slinky at this point. I don't think anybody's seen Diana in a while. She's pretty reclusive. She's last time I saw her, she came to see my Harmony Street group in Greenwich during the late 90s. She showed up one day at a dinner show, and you know, with her entourage, and she came over to us afterwards, and she said very nice, and she left.
Yeah, but that was nice.
Oh, very nice. Absolutely very nice. So you're doing some oldie revivals. I know Ned and I talked about this. I told him, I says, talk to little Anthony all the time, and he doesn't like the word doo-wop, as do a lot of the R&B guys that sang R&B on the corner. They didn't feel that they were singing doo-wop. They felt that they were singing R&B. That's why some people don't like you went to a doo-wop show. They'd rather be at an oldie revival or an oldie show than a doo-wop show.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that was the label before. When I started doing them in the early 90s is when they were called oldie shows.
Right.
The oldie revival shows. It was that kind of thing. And now everybody's kind of been lumped together into under the doo-wop umbrella. And I never considered myself a doo-wop singer because...
Right. You were a pop singer.
Yeah.
Of course.
But now it's just a new label. It's just a new handle. It's got to, I guess, come out every decade or so to keep people maybe interested.
I'm gonna make a statement, a very bold statement, and you're going to tell me how you feel about it. I wish there was someone who could have tapped you on the shoulder in those days and handed you some of that material that would have been only yours, and had they done that, you probably would have had 15 tunes in a row, because as far as, and I'll throw out some names, you know, Leslie Gore, Connie Francis, you know, I'll read you the whole list of names. You were as good as anybody that had those 15 hits and probably needed somebody to just hand you a stack of stuff that was like strictly Doty type of material.
Yeah.
And that's just my personal feeling. I don't know how you feel about that. It was a wonderful time that you had, you know, when you were doing some of that other stuff. But probably there should have been a smoking Doty ballad right after the Tan Shoes tune to cement who you really are. You know.
Well, and I know what you're saying, and I agree with you.
Okay.
I think what happened this is, of course, in retrospect.
Right.
And trying to second guess whatever the record company was doing with
right.
or trying to do with me. I think as soon as they found out that I had a voice that was trained, that could really sing a good ballad as opposed to Pink Shoelaces. You really didn't have to have a great voice to sing Pink Shoelaces.
However, you sang it very, very, very nicely. I mean, and you sang it sassy, and you sang it, and I disagree with you. Not everybody could have done that tune, but go ahead.
What I was going to say about it was that the record company felt that, oh, well, here's a kid that's got this awesome, mature voice.
Right.
Let's camp on that. And that's when they put out the first album.
Yeah.
That was all standards. Kids, the market, my fans, they didn't want to hear that.
Right, I agree.
Had it been a ballad.
They wanted to hear.
Like a Leslie Gore ballad or a Connie Francis ballad. I think my fans would have accepted that, but it wasn't. It was like taking them way back to what their parents would listen
right,
to.
Right, right.
And I think that's where they made the mistake.
No, I agree with you. It's funny, a good friend of mine is John Madara. He lives out by you. I don't know if you know John. He wrote You Don't Own Me for Leslie Gore.
Oh, yeah, great song.
He wrote At the Hop and Rock and Roll is Here to Stay, and he's still very active. As a matter of fact, At the Hop, the movie, is being worked on by him right now, and they've already signed some people. They're casting the situation at this point. And, you know, I'm going to call him up, and I'm going to say, John, write Dodie a tune. She needs to come out with a new tune.
Okay, you do that.
I'm going to do that. And, well, you know, what's really funny, though, too, is I'm sure, you know, when you've had a couple of hits and you think to yourself, what could I do now that this market would really be into? Because basically, I think today's teenagers would really embrace that kind of a 50s tune at this point because they've had so much of the other stuff. Look, I'm a vocalist. I've been in the music business all my life. I've recorded, I've produced, I've done everything there is to do in my life since I'm 15 in that vein. And I say to myself, unless I'm crazy, I listened to female vocalists over the last, you know, 8-10 years, and there's only a small handful that are really talented, and the rest of them are just, they're very squeaky, you know?
Yeah.
And the lyrics are not, you know, they don't give you what you used to get from a really talented, cultured female vocalist in those days. You're not getting it.
Yeah, well, right now the standard has been set for vocalists, and the standard is if you can sing with a 3-octave range,
right.
If you can sing those notes that are up in the stratosphere.
Oh, yeah, the whistle voice, yeah.
And stay there.
Right.
Not just maybe a couple notes, few notes here and there in the body of the song.
Right.
You've got this note and you hold on to it and it's
overdone.
Fine, and then you go back down into a little bit more subtle melody.
I hear you.
No, it's you go up there and you stay up there. For me, that is too much tension.
I hear you.
You know, I feel I'm not feeling comfortable. I'm not feeling like I'm in a nice, mellow state. I feel...
Yeah, I hear you.
It's almost like, you know, what is it, white knuckling?
Yeah.
A chair or something. You're just kind of... It's just so stressful to be up there that it doesn't do it for me.
Mariah's a great singer and whoever. But,
yeah.
But, you know, I agree with you. Just, you know, hit on that range and whatever and then get away from it.
Get away.
You know? I mean, Minnie Riperton made a career of it. It's, I agree with what you say wholeheartedly.
Yeah, but Minnie Riperton,
that was a different type of,
one of my favorites. She would just sing that really high thing every now and then, but she didn't have that voice where she was very mellow actually. And it wasn't until she sang that really high where only dogs could hear that, you know, she would do that, but it wasn't something that was just almost like screaming, like shouting and yelling, but there was never any of that coming out of Minnie's voice.
I have my favorites. There's a tune that I play, you know, I do a lot of interviews, but there's a tune that I play on the show whenever I'm playing music that I always try to insert, and that's Guess Who I Saw Today by Nancy Wilson. And every time I play that song, I get so many phone calls and emails and whatever. Do you know that song?
I don't know. Guess Who I Saw Today.
Ah.
Sounds familiar.
I'm going to send you that song. It's about Nancy goes out, or, you know, the character that she's singing about, and she just figures that she'll go out and she'll have lunch and she'll go shopping. And she goes to this little corner bar, and there's a couple sitting in the back, you know, and they're kind of cavorting with each other, and they're having a drink. And she's so jealous because they're sitting in the shadows, and they're kind of whispering love songs and whatever. And then all of a sudden she gets up and she finishes the drink. She goes to turn a heel, and she catches a glimpse of the people. She leaves, she goes home, and her husband comes home, and she says, the bottom line of the tune is, guess who I saw today? I saw you. And it just takes your breath away. I'm going to send you that tune as well.
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
You're so late getting home from the office. Did you miss your train? Were you caught in the rain? No, don't bother to explain. Can I fix you a quick martini? As a matter of fact, I'll have one with you. For to tell you the truth, I've had quite a day too. Guess who I saw today, my dear? I went in town to shop around for something new, and thought I'd stop and have a bite when I was through. I looked around for some place near, and it occurred to me where I had parked the car. There was a most attractive French cafe and bar. It really wasn't very far. The waiter showed me to a dark, secluded corner, and as my eyes became accustomed to the gloom, I saw two people at the bar who were so in love that even I could spot it clear across the room. Guess who I saw today, my dear? I've never been so shocked before. I headed blindly through the door. They didn't see me passing through. Guess who I saw today? Guess who I saw today? Guess who I saw today? I saw you.
You know, so, here we go. Now you're still singing, you're still teaching. You're singing with your daughter. Your daughter has her own career. I'm assuming she's out singing on her own. Is that correct?
Stephanie does some lead singing for a band every now and then,
right,
or a casual, you know, that kind of thing for weddings,
right,
or parties of some sort. Also, just recently was asked to do some background singing for a tribute group that,
right,
that's doing some work out there. So she does her own stuff on the side. But whenever it's with me, she's right there.
Gotcha.
Whenever we've got a show to do, that takes priority.
Uh-huh. Life is a song.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, Life is a Song. Life is a Song sing-along was my children's CD that I put out a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
And all the songs were written and recorded by Stephanie and me.
Oh, okay.
The songs were done a cappella, which I know you can appreciate.
Okay.
So we had no band. We just went in there and we duplicated the band parts with our voices. So
great.
Everything was done by just Stephanie and me, and with a lot of overdubbing
right.
on multiple tracks.
Right.
I thought that was a really cool way of doing a CD, especially for children. I thought, well, they can learn how to clap in time and snap and maybe do some bass parts and
right.
kind of simple stuff. And plus, I thought just doing it that way, there would be a lot of purity to the songs.
Gotcha.
And it's also meant to be sung along with them. So they're musical affirmations. They're very positive lyrics. The songs like I Am Happy, Set It Free, Attitude of Gratitude.
Right.
Life is good, so I say, everything is going my way. Life is good, so I say, everything is going my way. Only good, only good, only good is coming my way. Only good, only good, only good is coming my way. Life is good, so I say. An attitude of gratitude attracts my good to me. Just an attitude of gratitude attracts my good to me. An attitude of gratitude attracts my good to me. Yes, an attitude of gratitude attracts my good to me. An attitude of gratitude.
You know, those cute little things that they're learning things as they're singing them. Character, behavior, and just that kind of thing that most people don't even think about when
right.
they're writing songs, but I
right.
certainly did.
Of course, the type of thing that you can take into the schools, too. I was actually a dean in a very tough New York City school for 30 years, you know,
yeah.
other than my music career, so I know kids.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah, and this CD was primarily for your elementary school.
Gotcha. I understand.
And we took it into a few of our schools here locally, and kids loved it, easily sung along with, easy lyrics, easy melodies. That's how they were written.
Right.
And then the next CD that we did, I felt that I wanted to do the same thing, but only I wanted it to be for adults, because adults have pressures and problems and things that kids don't have, but they could definitely benefit from some of these songs as well if they were written with them in mind. So
no,
our
I
next
understand.
CD was A Singing Healing Journey.
Right.
And those were all for adults. So
right.
they could sing along with it. We did a workshop,
right.
a couple of workshops where people came along and sang the songs, and they just felt better when they, by the time they left, they felt better. It's singing. Listen, I don't have to tell you about singing.
I hear what you're saying.
No, it's a release.
Right? Oh, of course it is.
You can have the worst problem that's going on, and that's even physical, going up before you get up on that stage. When you're on that stage, you're singing,
listen.
You're performing, you forget about it.
I let go and let it be, and let my good come to me. Because when I let go and let it be, I let my good come to me. Come to me, come to me. All my good is coming to me. Come to me, come to me. All my good is coming to me.
Singing has saved my life. I lost my mother, my brother, and my father all within about a 15-month period about 10, 12 years ago.
Oh,
and I didn't want to sing anymore, and I just really crashed and burned, moved down from Connecticut to Florida, and I started singing again, and singing always has saved my life. So, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's that's where I'm coming from now. I mean, I love doing these doo-wop shows and people singing, hearing me sing about the songs from the past and the things that they remember. I love that. The nostalgia is wonderful, and to be a part of that is wonderful.
Now,
but at the same time, I want to do something new. This is current, and I see
that
the world is in such a mess.
You're right. We have a lot of things that we need to fix, and we, you know, that's a totally different show, you know, that we could do. But you know, to run down the list of things that we need to fix.
What about bullying? That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Bullying is just it has become such an epidemic in our country.
Right.
And that was the last song that Steph and I wrote was "I'm Not a Bully." And tried to get that into the schools.
You're talking to somebody who was a dean in a tough Bronx junior high school for 30 years. I had Jen Lopez was one of my kids in school.
Right.
I had Cuba Gooding Sr.'s grandkids in that school. I had George Foreman's niece in that school, and on and on and on. And I had kids who have become vice presidents at Citibank, and I have kids that will never get out from behind the bars. So, you know, that's how it is. And like I said, you know, that's another whole discussion about what's going on with the youth of America as far as the bullying thing goes. I hope it doesn't get worse before it gets better, you know.
So be a buddy. I'm not a bully. Be a buddy, buddy, bully. Not a bully, buddy, bully.
But you know, tough to segue from that into this. But you did some work with Raquel Welch, and that must have been interesting as well.
You know, that was really my first background gig was with Raquel.
Uh-huh.
I had been with Sergio, and we had worked Vegas, and the musical director for the show, who was also Elvis's musical director, he had asked me, because he heard that I was leaving Sergio,
right,
and that was my last gig with him, and he said, you know, I've been asked to do the music for Raquel Welch. She's
right.
opening at the Hilton in a couple of months.
Right.
Do you think you would be interested in being her background singer?
And you probably said...
And I said, she's, yeah.
You probably said, she sings?
Well, yeah, of course. I think I probably did say that.
Okay, go ahead.
But that was one of the reasons why they had hired me, because I was going to not just be one of the background singers, but I was going to be a background singer / stand-in vocalist for Raquel. So if she forgot her part or forgot words or whatever the...
I thought you were going to say body double.
I kind of like that. You know,
there
and
you
I would
go.
Jump in and I would sing her part and nobody would know that it wasn't her singing. And
there
then I would
go
when she found where she was. And
you
I'd
go, girl.
Into the background.
That's a great story. And you did some USO shows.
Oh, I did those as a little girl.
Now, what's really funny is that my wife, Paulette, did USO shows with Joey Heatherton and Bob Hope, but she knew Bob Hope very well, and he was very protective of her.
Uh-huh.
You know, so she said he was a great guy, you know.
Yeah.
But the USO stuff has to be very fulfilling.
Oh,
know.
I would, of course, it would have to be. I mean, I don't remember as a kid, but if I was doing it now, it would just be a great thing, although, you know... The troops wouldn't want to see me now, but you know what I'm saying. It's it's about doing something you know you're bringing some joy in an otherwise pretty...
So,
I don't even know the word that I could use to describe what it's like to be fighting for a country and, you know.
I hear you.
I don't know what that's like.
Are you aware of the fact that they're playing a lot of Doty stuff in the UK?
Well, I'm not surprised at that. I've done a couple of interviews in the UK just within the last year. So, and I know it was big there. I know Pink Shoelaces was very...
Not only Pink Shoelaces, they're playing some of the obscure stuff because they have now found this music, and a lot of the young people are getting into, really digging into tunes that were not even hits, but done by artists who had hits, and searching out the other stuff, because, I actually saw a few sites that were UK sites that are really promoting the Dodie Stevens stuff. You should look into that. You know, obviously it's the writers and the publishing companies who are, you know, reaping most of the benefits for that. But, you know, just FYI, you know, the UK is doing a Dodie thing lately. It's true. You know, and I'm going to tell you something that you probably won't even believe. I'm in the movies about 2 years ago, and I remember this, in Boca, in Movie Co., and someone's ringtone was Tan Shoes, Pink Shoelaces. I'll bet you never heard that. That was their ringtone. We hear this going in the, behind us about five rows, and it was Tan Shoes and Pink Shoelaces.
Oh, God.
That's an amazing thing. So
it is amazing.
They're, right, but you see, that's the world. These are things that you're not even aware of, and you're saying, you know, there's Dodie around, and you're not even aware of it.
No.
You know? Let me ask you this. Is there anything that you haven't done in your life, musically or otherwise, that you'd still like to do? Long sigh, long pause.
Yeah. Tough question.
Yeah, I snuck up on you with that.
Yeah, tough question.
I know. You know, that's the,
I have an answer for that.
Well, that's which is a great answer. Which means that, you know, that's a to be continued answer, you know.
Possibly so.
Now let me ask you this. Any interest in writing a book?
There is an interest in writing a book. Uh-huh. And I've had so many people tell me that I should when they've heard just a smidget of a part of my life.
Right.
What happened and what I was doing and
right.
It would be a good book. It would be a good book. Almost a tell-all, one of those kind of things.
I hear you. Well, my life is a book and a movie, mm-hmm. you know, for different reasons or whatever. But, you know, people know the artists and they know what they know on the surface. And they really don't know the flip side. And of course, people tell, you know, whatever, what they want to tell. I mean, I did an interview with Lenny, and Lenny said to me, quite frankly, he says, I'm going to tell you something that nobody knew about me. He said, I got disgusted with the business for 10 years, and I drove a taxi in New York. Here I was, I had the number one record in the country since I Fell for You, and then a few years later, I'm driving a taxi, and nobody knows who I am, he said, and I was bitter, and I was angry. He said, but, and nobody knew that. He says, and I'm sharing it with you, but, and I've never repeated it to anybody. So, you know, like people have this stuff in their life and it's their choice whether they want to keep it in their back pocket or whether they want to share it. But, it just sounds to me from having spent this time with you that, there's probably a book in there somewhere.
Oh yeah, there is a book.
Yeah. Okay.
There is a book.
All right, you know. Is there anything that you would like to say to Dodie fans that are still listening to Tan Shoes and Pink Shoelaces because it's number 43 in their jukebox?
Well, I'm grateful for every one of them. Without them, I wouldn't have the career that I continue to have.
Right.
And also, I'm hoping to get somewhere in your neck of the woods.
Okay, you know.
There's a new show that I've been working on with
right.
DiMaggio and Gronauer Productions.
Right, and of course, Jean is the lead singer from the Cascades who had Rhythm of the Falling Rain, and I have been speaking to him for quite a few years on and off. And that seems to me as if it would be a dynamite show.
I know. It sounds like something that would give the audience a little bit of everything.
Right.
I know that when we do these doo-wop shows, many times there's 8-10 artists, and you only get to see an artist for maybe 10 minutes.
Right, and they don't get a chance to open up.
Yeah.
And show you what they get.
They're barely getting started, and it's time for you to say goodnight.
Uh-huh.
But in this show that we're working on, which is the Jukebox All-Stars, there could be maybe three or four, or maybe two.
Gotcha.
It's kind of a rotation type of show.
That, right.
You get to really see a nice portion of each artist.
Gotcha.
You know, just they can do songs from the past, maybe something a little bit more current.
Right.
Or doing some stuff together. I'm looking forward to getting into the Florida area.
I've been talking to Ned about that, and I'm saying, you know, there are many different ways to approach it.
Oh, there's only one Ned DiMaggio.
Besides, you know, having a great baseball name.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Nice.
You know, because the baby boomers down here, I mean, they're all really starving for their music, and they crave it. They inhale it when they hear it and they recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there absolutely is a place for Dodie Stevens to be down here and singing, you know, for those people that enjoyed you then, and they can enjoy you just as much now. You know, I'm sure there'll be much more discussion about that. Would you like to give people your website? So if people want to go to your website and find out what's going on with you in the now.
Yeah.
Your website is...
My website is dodiestevens.com.
Okay, that sounds...
Pretty easy.
Pretty easy, yeah.
And they can go to the links, and they'll hear my new stuff that I've been doing. The Singing Healing Journey is on there. I'm Not a Bully is on there.
Right.
The Life is a Song Sing Along for the Kids is on there.
Right.
There's some YouTube links for some of my performances that I've done recently.
Right.
People can see what I've done and how I'm singing these days, and my daughter is part of that as well.
Right.
So, and photos, current photos, old photos. It's just kind of a fun website to visit.
Dodie, it's absolutely been my pleasure to speak to you. I hope that you get down to Southern Florida. I hope that your tan shoes and your pink shoelaces are enjoyed by everyone all over the country, and we're going to try to see if we can continue that. I just wish you all the best of luck. It's special to have had you on my show.
Well, it's
been a wonderful time.
Well, what a very nice thing to say, Mike. Yeah. I've enjoyed our talk today as well, and I'm always grateful for the opportunity to talk to my fans, whether it be over the radio or at gigs after the show and meeting them and shaking hands and taking photos. And I'm grateful and I'm happy to still be a part of it all. So thank you for having me on your show.
Absolutely. I mean, I learned an awful lot about you that I didn't know. And just always remember this. You don't have to dress up for radio.
You should see me now, honey.
Okay, Dodie,
I just love it. Thank you again.
It's been fun.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Open up your heart. Recall how it used to be. Remember all the love we found. Ooh. On Harmony Street, ooh, there was a place that we used to go, ooh, when we were feeling down and we were low. We couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's hearts. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. We couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's eyes. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street.
Remember all the love we found.